substance equals spurn. The propaganda's a win, stress feeding on my tension. My countrymen, they love their fiction. Words are now displayed with good intentions.
Welcome to 1-200. We're back for another episode of Current Events. I'm joined by a bevy of co-hosts. I don't like the word. A range of co-hosts, multiple co-hosts, some co-hosts.
A smorgasbord.
Amount of co-hosts.
An amount, yeah.
A bevy.
I was going to say an indefinable amount, but I know exactly how many co-hosts are here. How you doing, Oliver?
Yeah, good. How you doing?
Ginny, how are you?
Yeah, that sound that you just made, bottle that and repeat that, and that's how I'm feeling.
It's fantastic. And we've got Simone as well. How are you, Simone?
I'm not in Hamilton, actually.
Hey, look, things are looking up. No, we love Hamilton. We love Hamilton.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I left my duly elected representative PMAX there behind to make sure that it was still just the good old Tron that you thought it was in 50 years' time, where slowly farmland turns into American suburbs.
Wow. Much like a lot of New Zealand, frankly. Let's kick it off with some discussion about Gaza and the continuing genocide in Palestine. Things are bad. It is fucking horrific. Every day I want New Zealand media outlets to just all fold. I don't care what happens to them. They all lose their jobs. Okay, I'm sorry. Like, you know, there are some good journalists, blah, 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 blah. We've done it all before. You know, I accept, hey, some of you aren't doing international news reporting. That's fine. But Jesus fucking Christ. Yeah.
I mean, it seems like that might be part of it. We talked a little bit, I think, a few podcasts back. It was right after the ceasefire. And we sort of talked about that fear that the ceasefire, while objectively great, while the exchange of Palestinian hostages and the freeing of Palestinian hostages was a marvelous outcome of that whole process, that there is a risk that it would sort of dampen the momentum of the discussion, because knowing full well that Israel wasn't going to honor the ceasefire, and lo and behold, they broke it within 20 minutes and have broken it every day since. And now they've officially broken it. Like, I don't know. They crossed the new threshold where they're now killing hundreds of people in short spans of time. And so now it's, I don't know, it's more officially broken. And now they're talking about how they've broken it. And it's not getting the same amount of widespread, maybe that's just my perception, but it's not getting the same amount of widespread heat that it was before, which is worrying because it's ongoing.
This has been the ratchet effect that Israel has used for decades, right? Do an atrocity, cool it off a bit. You know, people talking about hospital bombings, for example. Release a whole bunch of Hasbara propaganda about how actually it was Hamas bombing the hospital. And then a little bit later, just bomb all the hospitals all the time. And then start announcing that you're bombing the hospitals and breaking international law. But because of the way that the narrative has developed under the watchful eye of Western media bosses and their dutiful reporters, it's seen as normal now for Israel to flagrantly break international law and murder hundreds of people.
And not just Israel either, because now we're seeing sort of America testing the waters with that, where they, this whole signal leak thing, where they announce in the chat that they've blown up an apartment building, and the only thing anyone in any sort of major media outlet is talking about is the OPSEC issue. The fact that they accidentally added a journalist to this chat.
Accidentally.
But nobody is looking at it going, okay, but hang on, in the chat logs, can we talk about the fact that they blew up an entire apartment building, killing hundreds of civilians to get one guy, and they're bragging about it, and they're joking about it, and it's a very serious war crime that would have ended the career of a politician 10 years ago.
I think what New Zealand should do is make sure we've still got military assets out there helping to aim those bombs.
I think it would have ended it because it was gauche, not because it was wrong. I mean, people remember that the person who really ramped up the Predator Drone program initially was Obama, and he personally oversaw killing American citizens like Anwar al-Awlaki, right?
But that was, I think what I mean is more, is not so much that, of course, they were unapologetic in doing it, but at least there was consequences. At least they tried to hide it because there was political downsides to being that bloodthirsty, and now there's not. So there is
I
a
think.
ratchet of that degree that Israel has shown you can do whatever you want and you won't even get criticized for it anymore.
The tone has changed. Like H.W. Bush said after they shot down an airline, America never apologized, or I will never apologize for America, right? So the distinction really is that you can be genteel, but now they can be vulgar about it. And that was something that the New York Times, I think you're quite right, was pearl clutching about in 2016 during Trump's first term, was look how uncouth he is. And now that everybody's got used to the uncouthness, it turns out that the underlying policy doesn't matter. So to draw it back to something that Kyle's just saying before, I think the ratchet effect, it long predates Hamas, right? Like this has been the case so long as, well, so long as Israel has existed, but it hasn't been an American ally except since, what was it, the 70s, somewhere around there. So previously they would say, rather than Hamas, these Arab countries are out to get us. They're preternaturally disposed to, they hate us for our freedom, to quote the great poet, George W. Bush. And once they had that pretext, they would seize land, seize the Golan Heights, get the post-1967 borders to infiltrate, through the settler program, the West Bank. And always they would encroach or annex something or in some way violate the non-aggression principle of the UN Charter. And then widely, this would be condemned by countries at the United Nations, but there were no enforcement mechanisms because the United States would veto anything from being able to come through the Security Council. And therefore, it then becomes precedent. So, on the one hand, you have the General Assembly for decades saying that this is an intolerable situation, that Israel does not have a right to do anything that it has been doing since its founding, since the Nakba, that Palestine has a right to violent resistance against violent occupation at international law. That is the legal position. That is the position of the countries of the world. But nevertheless, there is this disjunct between what is said through resolutions at the General Assembly and through non-enforcement at the Security Council, and therefore, in reality, once the ratchet moves, it never goes back.
No.
And that has accelerated, I think, as everybody's recognized throughout this acute portion of the genocide in Gaza, i.e., beginning from October the 8th.
To the point even where sometimes the UN's not even condemning it anymore. There's not even that fig leaf of condemnation, because there was that recent announcement by Israel that they're going to be setting up permanent occupation colonies in Lebanon and Syria, and both areas beyond the Golan Heights. And they just casually said that. They said, "Oh, we're just going to need to do that. It's just a forward position thing," which is what they said about Golan Heights. They said, it's just a defensive thing. We need to hold onto this territory as a buffer zone," was what they used to describe it as. And now they've done the exact same thing. And when Golan Heights was seized, there was condemnations. There was a round of nations calling out, saying, "This is unacceptable. We're not going to do anything about it. It's intolerable, but we will tolerate it." This time, there hasn't even been an outcry over it. So there's that development as well. There's no sense of, like, someone needs to be applying the law. There's not even that sort of hand-raising, sort of pearl clutching anymore. We've just begun tolerating infinite imperialism from Israel and the United States.
And if you're a regular what news reader in New Zealand, as opposed to a freak like the rest of us, or I guess a lot of people listening to this podcast, sorry to our audience, you wouldn't have
Sorry,
heard of most.
liberals.
You wouldn't have heard most of this, right? You wouldn't have heard most of this stuff. And we just had a report come back in the last week and a half or so, where Radio New Zealand was investigating its coverage of Gaza. And gave itself a clean bill of health. Said,
CIA finds no link between itself and the crack trade, I think, is the
yeah,
classic pull.
incredible. Just and essentially said, oh, it's because well, we get complaints from both sides, and I think it's mostly people are complaining to us because they're emotional about what's happening there, not with any real basis. And what was the other really egregious piece of reasoning? Israel is closer to us culturally, so we tend to cover more Israeli spokespeople. Not even Israeli news. I want to be really clear about that, because if we had purely Israeli news coverage here, we'd have a much better idea about what was happening. It's really bizarre. We don't have the perspectives of Palestinians frequently at RNZ, because Palestinians are culturally distinct from New Zealanders, is essentially the argument they were making. And that's fucking foul.
Unvarnished racism. And
Just
yeah,
incredible.
that I like how in their own self-report, when they reported on the outcome of their review, they used the phrase, since Palestinian armed groups attacked Israel and the subsequent Israeli response.
That
And I
yeah, and
was
that was
like,
from Colin
you
Peacock at Media Watch. That was
get
that's not even in the review.
like
That's
this is you talking about whether or not you have a like pro-Israel bias, and you refer to October 7th as an attack. What the Palestinians do is attacking, but what Israel did is not attacking. It's merely responding. And what does that response entail? Well, we're not going to go into it. We can't go
sorry,
into what that response means.
friend of the podcast, Hayden Donnell. Your compatriot Colin Peacock has made Media Watch almost dead to me, by doing that kind of egregious, like it's actually
It's disturbing.
absurdly
Kyle, why do you deny that history started on
facetious.
October the 7th?
It's so like it's there's no way that Colin Peacock doesn't know exactly what he did there. Like he's a smart enough guy. Like, he's done some good reporting before. He knows what framing is. It's fucking Media Watch to fucking pitch the conflict in that way is intentional and it's fucked.
I think it's probably also important to mention that in this review, what stood out to me anyway, as like I as a consultant who sometimes has to work at a place that gets asked to do like lit reviews and press reviews for publications, one thing that most consultants will do is have a slide in their 60 slide deck, right? Which is like, here are the things that we think you just shouldn't change. Here's what we think you should rightfully ignore. And Colin Peacock, I think, covered this in his review of the review. One of the critiques that was suggested by this external, non-external consultant, that they should reject completely, was basically that some complaints appear to be motivated by what they considered to be undisguised anti-Semitism. And also just to put those, I think, he said this, I think, in a paragraph shortly after he talked about basically people having issues around the use of the word Palestine, use of the word illegal, terrorists, and genocide. So basically saying that people who are complaining about the use of these terms being applied only to Palestinian people, like ter Palestinian terrorists, Israelis are rightfully there, that sort of thing. That critique of that overly was anti-Semitic, which I thought was an insane thing to read from a journalist. So they were like, everything about this, sure, put like a 14-step program together about changing your language slightly and don't use pull quotes or like quotation marks around Israeli people being not guilty of genocide or something. But you should actually just ignore people's critiques based on anti-Semitism. Like, why? Like, why did you even bother doing this review?
Well, you see, it's a legitimate report if there's a slide deck, and it should be listened to.
I think, yeah, it really just underlined for me everything we kind of already knew, right? Like over the course of doing a few IAs, and seeing just how unwilling RNZ was to even interrogate the possibility, that they were being biased about this. It's absolutely bizarre. There have been like a couple of good write-ups, one by Mick Hall on his Substack in Context. And another one by friend of the cast, Johnny Filmo, over on his Substack, just going through the review and picking it apart. But it's just incredible how blatant it is, how obviously they're whitewashing, and they know they're whitewashing. And at some point, there's going to be consequences of this shit, but it's not today.
I mean, there is one consequence of this shit, which was that recent Media Trust poll that came out that showed that it is literally the worst it has ever been in the history of the country. So I think the low point was 27% of people polled said that they trust major New Zealand media outlets to be honest brokers of information,
That's worse than the
and
US, right?
worse than America.
Well done, cunts.
America was sitting around like 36 or something percent, but in New Zealand, it's just basically no one believes the newspaper anymore, which is pretty bad, but also not undeserved because the newspaper has been peddling in deliberate disinformation for reasons beyond our comprehension. Well, we kind of comprehend it, but no one will admit it.
Yeah, and that's been accelerating as well. And especially, like, I felt as someone who like is reading too much news, I want to be really clear about this. I was continuously plugged into like news analysis, and media analysis, since the 2023 election campaign, right? Where there are a range of really clearly, evidentially provable, falsehoods peddled by the mainstream outlets en masse, some of which got called out within weeks with like substantial reasoning for why the media was wrong on this. I'm thinking in particular National Party's tax break promises. Craig Rennie completely took it apart. It came 2 weeks before the election. And in the month or so prior to that, you had basically every outlet saying, "Whoa, National eating Labour's lunch. They're doing it for working people." And when it was revealed that they were all wrong, every political reporter basically had been running this line. They were all wrong. We saw a number of them openly, multiple on Twitter in their personal capacity, I guess. I don't know. Apparently, they're not journalists while they're on there, blaming the audience for not doing their own research. It wasn't their fault that they had parroted, amplified and presupposed the outcomes of National's campaign announcement. It was the fault of the audience for not crunching the numbers, which it took the CTU economist a couple of weeks to do. It was the audience's fault for not all doing that themselves individually in the face of a full press media pack.
Also, it was really unfair because it was a big beat up, and it was, why are you bullying journalists who are just small beans trying to live their life and report on the things that they're being told without investigating
But it's got worse and worse, and I guess if we're staying
it?
on this, because we are, no, we are staying on this topic.
Carl's
This
like,
week,
we'll keep going.
this is what we're talking about. This is all we're talking about now. The one of the big media stories this week, at risk of just giving it more airtime, I guess, but it's worth doing our own little media watch about, was the reporting on Tamitha Paul's comments. Green Party MP Tamitha Paul made some comments at a university panel about alternatives to policing, saying that some of her constituents didn't feel safe around police, and maybe we should give resources to other organizations better suited to deal with situations like mental health crises.
She made the ridiculous comment that electrocuting a mentally ill person to death is bad, which is obviously silly. That's what you're supposed to do. That's what we want our police to be doing.
And it's just been absolutely absurd to see the way the media, and we've seen this so many times, and it's always Waini Māori, right? Like, who are targeted like this? Suddenly, every single outlet is running at front page with multiple stories and just lying, just outright lying about what was being said.
Well, that was, the thing that sort of s stuck out to me is what Tamitha Paul said. Sorry, Tamitha Paul is correct, objectively correct, measurably correct. We know it to be true, but it's being presented as something ridiculous. And one of the things she said was, the majority of people in prison are in prison for non-violent crimes.
Well, and
Objectively
this was
factual
predated even the
statement.
story, right? This was
Yeah.
like a little while back, and now they're trying to claim like she's been under fire for a month. Like,
And
excuse
so
me?
they, one of the people who reported on it said, well, 36% of crime people in prison are in there for violent crimes, and 21% are in there for sex crimes. And if you add those numbers together, it's 57%. But you're not supposed to add those numbers together because sex crimes fall under violent crimes. And so what they've done is they've deliberately split off these numbers to create a, literally just a completely false impression of reality, and give the sense that what she'd said, the majority of people in prison in there for non-violent crimes, make it seem like it was a silly thing to say, when in fact it's just the truth. It's just a fact.
Majority of people in prison haven't been convicted and sentenced.
But like, this is
They
the thing,
have the
and we talked about
fucking
this
presumption
before.
of innocence.
Yeah,
Jesus.
like they're on remand because the
Yeah,
system's so fucked.
I should say there is actually a split between those who are on remand awaiting sentencing and have had a conviction entered, and those who have not, right, and are awaiting some kind of trial or other part of the criminal process, yeah, and those have the presumption of innocence. But still, nevertheless, like the fact that this has steadily gone up over decades, I don't know. I was listening to a talk from a judge who's now moved to Wellington, and what His Honor was saying was there is a real concern, and not every judge, especially at the district court, has this concern. It's like, in fact, many of them, I'm sure, really love it. But steadily, the population of our prison, the percentage of it being people who have not been sentenced and are actually serving out their time, has increased. And this is because of changes to bail. And you can look at it every time the law is changed to restrict the ability for people to get bailed, it goes up. But this is not only just because of legal changes, there are also practical changes. Now, there's been the case of, his name is escaping me, the homeless man who was on hunger strike. I don't know if somebody can help me out. The thing that I'm surprised about in this case, in any case, is that this has gained any sort of national attention, not because it's undeserving, but because he is one of many people. The number one determinant when I am making a bail application for somebody is, do they have a home? Now, the need for an address is not in the Bail Act, but it does not matter. A judge will require somebody to not be homeless effectively, or otherwise there has to be some other form of support. There has to be some charity filling the gap. There has to be some form of social service doing it, right? And this is not universally true. There are other things that can be done, like a reporting condition, etc. But there are so many factors against somebody who doesn't have shelter, who doesn't have a job, who doesn't have the white picket fence life from being able to get bail, that as we've seen inequality worsen, it hasn't been needed necessarily to make these legal changes to these amendments to the legislation to restrict bail in order to make sure that more of our population are doing free work in prisons and or enriching these security companies like Serco, right? They can't just lock more people up. Not for crimes, but for being poor.
And it seems like that is part of that deliberate strategy. I mean, the new sentencing laws that you sort of shared in the chat the other day that is predicted to increase a 40% rise in prisoner population over the next decade, which is a staggering number of people. But the thing is, none of this is mysterious. None of this is coming out of the blue. We already know what National and ACT have been sort of pushing for, which is privatization of New Zealand prisons. And this is part of that program. They're kind of just running the same playbook they have on our health system, which is strip out resources, increase intake, put the system under pressure. Wait for the system to start falling to pieces, and then once it's falling to pieces, start then pitching to people the idea of privatization. So they're doing it with health. They're trying to put this pressure on the system. They're getting all these people on waiting lists, getting everyone panicking, going, "Why am I in this situation?" They'll do the same with the prisons. They're going to just get these prison populations up and start showing all these sort of terrible conditions and going, "Look at this mismanagement of the system. You know who's going to do it better? We need to expand the access of Serco into our system. We need to let more international companies come in here. We need to expand our laws." And then we go, "Well, now we've got all these guys in prison. We also need to, make use of their time in there." So they'll reinvent this American system of chattel slavery within their prison system, because that's always been the goal. That's always been the aim of this entire project, is privatization.
Yeah, firstly, people associate that with the restrictive securitization of it and of, like you're noting, the privatization of prisons itself. But the privatization, as it already exists, is not only within the punitive component. It also exists within what I would call the NGO industrial carceral complex and the parasitic octopus of different charities which suck up MOJ contracts in order to fulfill essential social services for people who are going through the criminal system and need some sort of support, otherwise they will be set up to fail. And many of them are indeed set up to fail. For example, if you don't have a home and needing to be bailed to a night shelter or a shelter which continues to, give somebody shelter night after night, they oftentimes have rules which are quite specific to them. So, for example, they might be a religious one, and therefore you have to attend their chapel, or you have to in some way not use the drugs that you are addicted to. You have to somehow yourself just magically get clean of methamphetamine in order to have the right to not be in there, right? Or not to drink alcohol is a good example of that, right? Something which is legal, but we must control these people's behavior. So there's so many millions of dollars being poured into these non-governmental organizations, which are charities, and there is already this privatization, not only through what we would see the punitive component, but also the supposedly helping and ameliorating component, which in fact is really just a kind of both control and money-making exercise. Now, they're not making huge profit from this. I don't want to suggest that, but the stripping away of state support, for example, the idea that somebody could have a place to live because we actually provide housing for people, is something which is a part of that entire matrix. They are two sides of the same coin. This is a single monster. And the second thing is, and I think you've touched on this very briefly, is that the intention with this, with creating this kind of class of enslaved persons or an otherwise incarcerated persons is the disciplining of the labor class. It is not a coincidence that this is happening at the same time that National has manufactured a recession and is causing unemployment to go up while upping benefit sanctions, because when people don't have money, they will commit crimes. They will shoplift. They will get nappies for their kids. Then they are incarcerated. And this is held up as a threat, a big stick in front of the remaining labor class that says, you better not ask for wages too high. You better not leave your job or you're being sexually harassed. You better not step out of line. Remember your place in the working class. That is the purpose of it.
Yeah. And as you know, it's all part of the same discourse machine when media pick up this kind of stuff. You know, it's no coincidence that these sentencing laws are going through and suddenly we have this outrage by a left-wing MP, right? And the media runs around to every other party leader except for Te Pāti Māori for some reason and asks them to openly abuse a young Māori woman MP reporting on her constituents live
and
on camera.
And taking a facts-based, like an evidence-based approach to criminal justice reform. Because that's the thing that I just keep hammering on is, like, she's just correct. And so, like, when you see these sound bites of Luxon and David Seymour and Winston Peters and, fuck's sake, fucking Chris Hipkins.
That like was embarrassing.
The quote-unquote Labour Party joining in this beat-up. The thing you have to keep in mind is all of those men are completely delusional. They're not engaged in reality. They either don't know or they're deliberately lying, but they simply don't understand the facts of the situation and they're talking out of their arse. And yet that's what's being reported on. It's being talked about as though they have some kind of authority, but they're just objectively, factually wrong about the reality of policing and the prison system in New Zealand.
And just using language which would probably get them censured if it was aimed at anybody else.
Which is absurd. Like, if you look at the search, sorry to interrupt you. I hope that we have someone, I'm speaking now to someone, in my mind, there is someone listening to this podcast right now who is like a junior level person at the Herald or staff or RNZ or something. And you do know, right, that once you publish the news with whatever SEO shit tagline your boss asks you to use, aka Tamitha Paul in La La Land, what planet are the Greens on?
It's not called reality. What?
Tamitha Paul, ill-informed, stupid, and totally out of touch. Once you publish these headlines and your boss has gotten like a really great engagement boost from the first day, you can go back into the CMS and just change them. Just change them so that when Google re-indexes your site 5 days from now, it just magically won't be there anymore. But your boss won't fire you because you've already got the engagement on the day. You can just do this. I believe in you. If you're listening to this podcast, you're ready
do
to
the
radicalize.
Right,
you can just do this. Okay? There's no need to run that line for the coalition, especially if you're the spinoff. Why would you put in your headline, is Tamitha Paul in La La Land? Why the fuck would you do that?
That was the one thing about the People Against Prisons Aotearoa piece, right, which was a fantastic piece, and was doing everything that you were talking about, Oliver, in terms of providing all the evidence that Tamitha Paul was just correct. Oh, we've got to get the SEO. We've got to do this fucking headline. Just like, get fucked. Like, I don't care. Like, come on. You're also buying into the fucking framing. Like,
Yeah,
it's really frustrating to see the way like discourse management happens in that way. Like, oh, but that's just what everyone's seeing and that's what people are clicking on. No, it's because
you're making them see it.
there's no counterexample. Like, how about you try writing, oh no, I'm gonna get myself arrested. Don't worry.
In like,
But
okay, or from like a practical perspective, like as well, like I know that, and this is as someone who works in media publishing, it's like I know that everyone's like, oh, look, SEO is like really important, like it's what gets clicks. But like, the trust survey that was done recently, or at least for the year of 2024, I think in New Zealand, actually, the figures were something crazy. It was like something like more than 75% of people in New Zealand actively avoid the news, which is actually 30% higher than America. And if we rag on America for getting the news headlines about, like, I don't know, like ketamine and horse drugs and stuff from conspiracy theory Facebook groups, that same thing is happening twice as frequently in New Zealand. People are actively avoiding news outlets. So if you think about it, your clickbait SEO headline doesn't matter at all. Like, most of the country is actually actively avoiding it. All they're going to see if they Google something, they're just going to read the headline, see that you've called Tamitha Paul crazy, and then be like, oh, vindicated, and move on. Because they're not going to actually read your entire article where you explain that she's not actually in La La Land, that you actually support her policies.
yeah,
you know,
it's
also
pretty
if it
absurd.
were about clickbait, you can say David Seymour is in La La Land, which is factually correct, and that would also get people to click because
Yeah.
most of
People
the
would love
country
that.
hates
You
his guts.
could say
Or you
David
could, you know what you
Seymour
could
covered up for
say?
Tim Jago, right? Like,
Yeah, what, David Seymour aided and abetted a child rapist. Boy, that'd get you some clicks.
Yeah,
exactly.
damn.
Apparently, it's not really about the clicks, and we know that
A
now.
salacious TVNZ documentary, like, you know.
David Seymour harassed and bullied rape victims. A factual thing that you could put in the headline that would get you a lot
I
of clicks.
think
How come?
if you
How
can
come we're
use
not
Betteridge's law of
using
headlines, it's like, is David Seymour a pedophile question mark? And then it's like, well, we're not saying he is, you know.
Yeah, it's
And
I
the
the thing
answer is
is,
always no when you pose a question. So it's okay actually to say that.
what I hear
Well, you can't say no either though.
from media insiders is that they just don't have the resources to type things into keyboards like this,
See, when you, I
unfortunately.
mean,
Unfortunately.
when you get into a news organization, they implant the severance chip in your brain, and if you try to write about Tim Jago, your hands go to the keyboard, and your brain just kind of gets fuzzy and all sort of white, and you can't type it. That's the thing.
Whoops.
They don't tell you. Sorry,
Well,
Ollie.
I mean, we know what the answer is because we can sort of beat around the bush, but the truth is, it's because our media organizations are being run by ideologue.
Well,
And
yeah,
that's
this is.
kind of, I mean, that's where the editorial line comes from because, you know, we have people like Sinead Boucher, who is part of a right-wing lobbying group, who is also now the
I
CEO of
think you'll find
Stuff.
they're non-political.
No, well, yeah, I mean, yeah,
Impartial and
awesome.
non-political, she'll have you know.
Yeah, that's certainly the way that they like to frame it, which is weird because every time anyone ever says them, they're impartial and apolitical, though they have the politics of fucking Adolf Hitler. This is the thing. They're pushing constant right wing stuff, and then suddenly the editorial line of Stuff, we shouldn't be surprised that they're not willing to engage with any sort of left wing ideas in good faith. We shouldn't be surprised that their coverage of Gaza is
That's
explicitly
just
and
how it is.
deliberately
So why are you even
pro-Israel.
complaining about
Which, and it's so
it?
funny because it's like it doesn't make sense from a financial standpoint. You know, they have this massive erosion of trust. They have this kind of loss of subscribers. They're sort of falling apart. They're fighting. I mean, you look at Israel and you look at the way that the vast majority of the world sees it, which is they recognize the atrocities, they recognize the genocide. But the newspapers are sort of constantly trying to push back on that narrative because they think that they can fight the tide. And all they're doing is just cutting off their own noses to spite their face. They're pushing this stuff, and all it does is further erode that trust because everyone goes, why are you trying to lie to me? Why are you saying, dude, stop believing your eyes and start believing our words? It's weird, and it's gonna lose. It has to lose the money in the
Well,
long run, unless they're receiving some kind of like dirty money in the back that's better than the money that they get from
I mean,
subscriptions.
actually, hashtag believe women, believe Sinead Boucher when she says bullshit.
Well, the thing is, as well, it's like it's cultural capital, right? And like most of the people working in media don't get this shit, right? They're not getting any kickbacks. They're not getting networking opportunities. It's people at the top of the chain, and you know, you go all the way back to that fucking BBC Chomsky episode where he's like, yeah, you just wouldn't be in this role unless you already met those
Criteria.
the necessary characteristics for someone working in the media. And that was what, 40 years ago, 30 years ago.
The interview was
It's
with Andrew Marr,
that's
yeah.
the one. And it's just got worse. It's like, yes, neoliberalism and the corporatization of media has made it a worse situation for journalists. They have less resource. They're under all these pressures. Yeah, that's really sad. I fucking hate that. Like, I also want like people who work in media to have good, stable jobs where they're not forced to be cunts. Unfortunately, that's where we are, and you can make a decision about like what you do with that. There's a really interesting. This is one of those really interesting things about New Zealand media sometimes, is that because stuff is just being reported, and there's not a level of analysis all the time, like a lot of the stuff isn't crafted, right? It's not like, oh, we're gonna really fucking push the discourse in this direction. It's hijacked, and just everyone does the same fucking thing. You don't have independent reporters independently like going through and typing up a fucking missive like, this is how we're gonna make sure we fucking nail Tamitha Paul. They're just jumping on this fucking carousel. But you've had a couple of really interesting pieces of information that is just almost accidentally dropped into the discourse. The first one is on the Tamitha Paul situation, where I think it was a Stuff journalist, when they're trying to pitch this idea that Paul had been under fire for comments for months, right, or for a month, as opposed to it being confected within like 2 days over the weekend. And as part of that, they quoted an ACT Party newsletter or PR release from last week, where they mentioned she had been at this panel and asked, should the Greens have to answer whether they want to abolish prisons or something similar? And you're like, wait a second, that was at the beginning of last week. And now suddenly, every news organization and every other media, like every government political party and Labour reporting this in concert. Like, where did it come from exactly? Like, there's a real clear pipeline here, which basically no one else has reported on, or even considered as potentially meaning that this is purely political. But from my point of view, if a political party, if a far-right political party has put out a press release claiming something, or no, they didn't even claim it. They did the asking the question thing. And then we end up with like, what, 2 days straight of multiple stories on multiple on every major New Zealand outlet. You should be asking questions about how news is being created. The second thing is this recent Andrea Vance piece about
Oh, come on.
the Free Speech Union working with James Grenin to take over NZME. And that's like frightful, and it's in the first place. Like, that's crazy. Like, everyone knows now, or should know, that the Free Speech Union is a far right AstroTurf organization that openly supports white supremacists. Under the guise of free speech, and yet they're still treated as if they're just like a little fucking startup pro free speech lobby group, right? There was two sentences in there about the way that the Free Speech Union operates, and they claimed, and there's no reason to think this is not the case, that for the last couple of years they had had direct engagements with Michael Boggs, the CEO of NZME, to push him on editorial direction and the way that NZME was run as a media org. Alongside that, they were also had also been working over the last couple of years with major shareholders in NZME to push their specific line about freedom of speech and editorial decision making. And that has culminated in the attempted editorial takeover by James Grenin on the back of this 10% buy-up of NZME shares.
Now, for listeners at home, you might hear the name Michael Boggs and you think, man, why don't I ever hear about any of these people? Just go, hop on the internet and do a quick search for Michael Boggs, and then pop onto the image tab and check out the first thing that comes up. Well, it might not be the first thing. It'll be pretty high up. One of the
I
top
know what you're talking
stories
about, actually.
will be Michael Boggs in blackface. Yeah, he went to some dress up party and was trying to, I think he was trying to be a rapper or something. I don't know, he part of it, but he wore blackface and there was a whole scandal about it. And then just kind of have a look down at sort of this guy and just try to get a sense, at least from just Googling this man, what he might believe about the world or what his worldview might be, this man who was in charge of NZME.
Even before he has been deliberately and specifically tapped up by a far-right AstroTurf group that regularly defends white supremacists, right? Like, this is happening at the top of the news hierarchy. There's no reason to believe that this isn't happening across other outlets as well. And when you have that level of penetration of media leadership, there's no reason why the CEO of fucking NZME should be meeting these cunts. Like, except that they have a
Shared
shared
interests.
interest in like going in a specific direction. And we've seen that happening in real time. And it makes, this is something that we've posited previously, like these fuckers are everywhere doing this shit. Now there's actually evidence of it. Yeah, I guess that's my piece on how fucking destitute the New Zealand media environment is. But yeah, it's designed, it's coordinated, it's with intent. Doesn't matter whether or not, like, a whole bunch of reporters are liberal or not. The people who are in charge of this shit, who are deciding, like, who they advertise with, what the pressures on the media workforce are Nazi adjacent.
Also, Carolyn Luey is leaving NZME, which is an interesting and sudden shift. Even the news reporting on it have said, well, this is kind of an interesting development immediately after Grennan made his investment. But yeah, one of his sort of things I think he said on his way in was that he wanted to downsize the board. And it'll be interesting to see who gets downsized out of that. But the first one to go is a non-white woman.
Who could have guessed?
Interesting to me, thinking generally about the attacks on people like Tanner the Paul, that I mean, a little while ago, right, we were saying, where is Chris Hipkins? Is he just collecting his salary and not saying anything? Leave the position. And where's he going? Why is he not talking? And then he started opening his mouth now, and I've changed my mind. Chris Hipkins,
Yeah,
stop
he
talking,
should shut
challenge
the fuck up,
2025.
actually. Yeah.
You know, I disagree with my former stance. I don't stand by all my statements and Prime Minister's questions. I think that he should shut the fuck up if he can't say anything good. Because imagine that. Like, imagine coming out just to swing at someone like Tamitha Paul, who is correct, to try to get votes that you're never going to get, and not talk about the. I won't say this is a distraction because I think it actually goes hand in hand with it, in manufacturing the consent for it for this new sentencing amendment bill, along with, and I want to point out that National recently actually just shoved through under urgency, meaning it was passed in one day, an amendment to the Bail Act for the sentencing bill, and not discuss actually what it contains, because the notion of restricting judicial discretion to cap it at an arbitrary number like 40% is a real concern, right? And there are a lot of reasons why, and we could go into all of the reasons why. But one thing that I will say about it is this is not a hypothetical scenario. The biggest discounts nearly always come from collaboration, i.e., flipping and snitching. Right? Because you need some kind of protection. So you probably shouldn't be in the prison population. So, in order to get somebody down to home detention range, oftentimes that's the only way that it can be done. If it is capped at 40%, you are actively stopping the police, if you're supposed to be like, you know, a tough on crime person, from being able to dismantle these networks of organized crime. That's just one little thing. So ostensibly, if that's something that you cared about, fettering judicial discretion this way is going to do that.
But I mean, it comes down to the fact that, as we said right at the start of this part of the conversation, they just want more people in prison. It's why they're currently expanding Waikerea, right? Like, they want more people in prison. That is the purpose of it. And is it Mark Mitchell was just saying recently, like, they expect the prison population to, like, they're like planning for it to get to ridiculous numbers.
Yeah,
Well,
Mitchell
they're watching what's
said he
happening.
anticipated it could be 14,000, the prison population. That would bring New Zealand's per capita of prisoners per 100,000. At the moment, it is currently double Canada's, and it's above both England and Australia's per capita numbers. But that would bring it in line with about Iran, right?
Because they're, yeah, I mean, they're looking at what the sort of Trump administration is getting away with, and they're calibrating. They're going, okay, well, we don't know if we can get away with that, but we can certainly push the boat out a little bit because this is what the US did, and nobody said anything, so maybe we can try it. And it's very clear, like these enormous breaches in the United States of judicial process with their Gestapo literally like lifting citizens off the street for speech, literally just talking for the words that they've said, lifting them out, arresting them, detaining them, putting them in facilities that they are not reporting. So you can look up their like arrest record, and it won't say what facility they're being kept in. So they're literally taking them to black sites,
And when we're only seeing like one out of
whatever one makes it
hundreds,
high profile. Yeah,
yeah,
it's
there are
just
people
whatever
being
one
disappeared, like
breaks above the surface, and they're being disappeared for political views. But I think that I probably like. A couple of years ago, maybe one of my first ever episodes we talked about on this podcast, I was saying about how like every Western country is kind of looking to America to vanguard this kind of fascism. They're going, we are heading into a period of extreme crisis, capitalist crisis, but also environmental crisis. We are seeing the sort of rise of class consciousness of. Awareness of the negative elements of American empire and Western hegemony, and as that stuff grows, the response from governments has not been, well, how do we make concessions to the working class? How do we offer them some kind of nice way out? Which is what they did in the past. It's the FDR method. They're instead going, how do we crack down on this behavior, and one of them is expanding prison populations. It's increasing, bringing back three strikes. It's pushing out laws that will allow the government to crack down on people further.
The incoming protest law, right? And it's part of why, ACT in particular, as well as Outriders, I think some media organizations have been trying to push this abolish prisons wedge, right? Which is a purely like US attack on the left, and which no one had mentioned, right? Until ACT just started asking the question about it. But it was used very effectively during the Black Lives Matters protests to carve off a section of the US left within the Democratic Party and blame radical leftists for all the failures of the Dems to take back seats from the Republicans because they weren't catering enough to the far right and to authoritarian carceral policy. So they're actively like just trying to fucking cookie cutter that over into New Zealand. And it's like they're doing with stuff like DEI, right? Or woke. Like stuff DEI doesn't exist here. Like we don't have something called that here. But they have no other way to conceptualize this stuff because they're fucking idiots. And they know that their really core supporter base, the people who are running around rabidly on behalf of the ACT Party, are just totally plugged into this fucking pipeline of American far
That's the
right
thing,
slop.
yeah. Because they tried it on with the term co-governance. They tried to pejorativize it, but then they kept finding resistance, like fucking Leo Malloy being like, "Nah, co-governance is good. I like working with Māori groups." Like they just couldn't get any traction. So they're like, "Oh, fine, we'll just copy paste the American model. That kind of works because they're all watching Fox News every day anyway."
But it just means like if the New Zealand media here like had any no, it's not even any point talking about them. They're all watching Fox News and MSNBC all the time as well, and so they're more than happy to use terms like DEI, non-ironically, because they think everyone knows what it is because it's the only fucking like waveform they're getting. It's absurd.
There's that old pan of the fascist movement, which is that we didn't want to do the concentration camps. You forced our hand by being gay. Like that's always like that's the whole playbook is just we didn't want to be fascist, but you just did a thing that annoyed us a little bit, and now we have to. It's
Yeah, I
that
mean, I've.
it's that pathetic sort of obligate, like, oh, we don't really believe in that stuff because they know it's reprehensible. They know that it makes the average person fucking sick. And so they have to be like, well, this is simply a response.
What's
Which
frustrating is
reminds
that.
me, it brings me back to that RNZ framing of Israel Gaza. Israel's not violently carrying out the most brutal genocide of the 21st century. Israel is not intentionally burning children to death in hospital beds. Israel is
Yeah.
responding.
And I've seen similar stuff being used to like give Hipkins an out for the way he responded to Tamitha Paul's comments, right? Where he said
He called her an
vote,
idiot.
yeah, like that's stupid. She should apologize to police, right?
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck, bro? Like, oh, but she should have spoken better. She shouldn't have said something so stupid then. Like, what? Like, are you fucking kidding me? Oh, he has to respond that way because he has to be in the police's corner because that's what voters want. You know, like, get over it. Come on.
If that's the case, what you're supposed to do as the leader of Labour is give a neutral thing and say, "Oh, look, I understand both perspectives."
Or just like, well, like,
I mean, it's cowardly, but it's what you can do.
this is a
You're
really
allowed.
easy out. Well, that's a different political party, and I'm not going to speak about their views. What
Yeah.
I think is we should support the police, right? Like, I mean, come the fuck on. Like, they're a
Yeah,
really
you could be
easy
a,
out.
you could just be a different, you could still be a coward. You'd just be a different brand of coward
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
slightly more palatable.
Not looking forward to Christopher Hipkins continuing on this track and becoming increasingly more anti-woke. That's all I've got to say. I don't want to be saying in 3 to 4 months, you heard it here first. Look at Keir Starmer. Now look at Chris Hipkins. Same picture.
Yeah, soon Chris Hipkins is going to be banning ninja swords on the anniversary of the
Wow,
Meiji
that
Nine
just makes
Declaration.
sense. It's just good, that's just good policy is banning ninja swords. We can't have ninja swords
Which
out
ninja
here.
sword? Chris Hipkins dismantling the woke shogunate.
The
The
woken it.
woke shogunate.
the Shinobi Foot
The
Clan, yeah, finally, those ninjas that have been running around, we'll deal with them.
woken
Obviously, samurai protected. You can still have your katana, your adachi, don't worry about that. But you cannot have ninjato because
Yeah, we're
that is
getting
what
rid
I've
of
met.
the woke
Tanto maybe,
shogunate.
wakizashi, oh, but a side eye, katana, absolutely not.
We're getting rid of the woke shogunate
Actually, I
variety
think a lot of people are
and
quite disrespectful to
actually.
their daimyo and they're having coming around at the kotatsu and on the tatamis and having some sado, some tea ceremony, but they're not actually respecting the daimyo. They don't bow properly. They don't do it at the appropriate angle of 90 degrees. I think we need education in schools to help them to bow.
Horrible.
Very good care impression, though.
You're gonna have to start working on your Chris Hipkins impression. I'm sorry.
He doesn't sound like anything because he isn't anything.
He isn't
Yes.
anything. He's
Isn't
just a loaf
anything is
of
a
bread. Yeah.
brutal comeback to that. You're like, I can't make a good impression of him because he's just fucking nothing.
What
He's
impression does Chris Hipkins make in your mind? He slips off.
What are you saying is Chris Hipkins is the everyman. I get it. I get it.
He's
Yeah, old
Teflon.
Chippy in his hoodie.
It's a fucking nerdy student president who wanted to be prime minister from the day that he was born. Yeah, it's like, he's so casual. I'd love to go to the dairy and get a pie with him.
Oh God, yeah, his whole like, it's time for me to develop a personality. I'm gonna just talk about sausage rolls. What a cunt.
And what a great place to end the episode. Thank you for joining me, everybody. Thank you, Oliver. Thank you, Jenny. Thank you, Simone. We got through quite a bit there. Thank you to the audience for joining us. I'll put a couple of the articles we talked about into the podcast summary so you can read those and share those as well as sharing this podcast episode so that you can help people find out that there is media analysis happening. There is at least one group trying to unpick the information warfare being waged on us by far-right corporates and lobby groups. And get on board. Join us. Help us to fight back, I guess. Join an organization and start organizing because it's getting bad out there.
And if you're looking for organizations to join, Hamas is recruiting, Hezbollah is always looking for new members.
They're gonna claim that you're working for them anyway, so why not get in early?
Just an unpaid
Hezbollah has the coolest
influencer.
flag.
All right, catch you later, everybody.
If artifice is art, then I'm living a pointless life, but I'm learning all your lessons. Fucking politics, there's no distinction. The words upon now is paid with good intentions. And I'll admit that I'm at a loss for what to say. say when they criticize the cost we ought to stay. Cause I live amongst the people every day. In this vindictive, forgetful fucking rain. It feels like we're on the road.